flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's welcome our next guest. Our first guest of the day, a man who played in two Super Bowls for the Philadelphia Eagles and will now observe as both his brother and his former team play. And Jason Kelce, always brought to us by Garage Beer. The garage always open. Light beer like it used to be. Find Garage Beer at your local retailer or at drinkgaragebeer.com. That's drinkgaragebeer.com. Official beer of the Kelce brothers and dads everywhere. And obviously, the beer you should have in hand 10 days from now. Good morning,
yeah,
Jason. How are you, pal?
How we doing, Joe?
Good, man. I got to tell you, those sales got to be going up, up, and up, man.
The garage beer?
Uh-huh.
It's doing pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, a lot of people are stocking up their garages for the big game, for sure.
Good, yeah, man.
Oh, it's beer-flavored beer, baby.
That's right.
Can't beat it.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
Fridge beer.
So, man, Jason, what a time for you. I mean, it feels like the whole fall was a time for you, but this is like... Another, you seem to specialize in these convergences, you know, like what
just
in the world?
Walking into stuff that has nothing to do with me.
Can't avoid it, man.
Got a little bit to do with you.
Yeah.
So how you feeling,
I'm
man?
Adjacent to everything. I feel good. Feel really good. Obviously, this past Sunday could not have gone better. Very happy with the results from everything. And listen, I'm looking forward to it, man. Last time I was down in Bourbon Street, we were playing the Florida Gators in the Sugar Bowl.
Wow.
And we got absolutely mollywopped. So it's going to be fun. That place is a hard place to not have fun. I'm going to get to see a great game between two teams that were just in this thing a couple years ago. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
You want to tackle the who you're rooting for thing right out of the gate? I mean, because, you know, people have been asking me.
We got to.
Where we stand here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I want most of the attention to be on the guys on the current team and everything like that. I mean, for me, I am tied to both of these teams. Obviously, my brother plays for the Chiefs, but there's a lot of people that I consider like family with the Eagles organization, former teammates, coaches, and players, and this is where I live and reside, and obviously I love the city of Philadelphia. So the reality is I'll be happy in some ways with whoever wins, and I'll be upset in some ways with whoever loses, and I really got a lot of guys that I'm pulling for that have never won it in Philly, and obviously I'm always pulling for my brother. So it's a torn situation. I know it's not what anybody wants to hear.
No, but like, we respect like, that. I mean,
yeah, it's your brother, like, man.
That's the reality of it. Yeah. I can go up here and troll and say some ridiculous answer, but for me, I just think that that's the reality of it. In some ways, I'm going to be happy. In some ways, I'm going to be sad. And probably a similar situation to what my parents were dealing with when both my brother and I were playing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So there is there a way to explain the massive difference in intensity defensively for this Eagles team this year compared to last year? You know, it's not the defense is so much different. Yes. It's so much improved, yeah, but it's so much more than just the X's and O's of it. You know, the intensity,
yeah,
how do you explain that part?
Well, I think, one, they're just better, like better from a personnel standpoint. I think they have players that are better at making plays, more talented. The linebacker position, I mean, Zach Bond You cannot say enough good things about that guy. Yeah. Obviously, everybody talks about Jalen Carter, but their whole D line is really playing strong and physical. And I think a lot of it is coaching. I think a lot of it is when you are good, you tend to play with more emotion and higher expectations. That's just the reality of it. I mean, one of my favorite things that Stout always would say is, you know, execution fuels emotion. You want a defense to feel good, go get sacks on third down and create turnovers, and like all that stuff builds. And these guys have now stacked an entire season worth of playing well. And it didn't start off the cleanest. And this is where I think the coaching does come into play. Like, I think you look back at that Atlanta game and they could not stop the run against Atlanta, and it was overwhelming. And then they come back, and now I don't know that there's anybody that's really run the ball on the Philadelphia Eagles since that game. Like, right. They have answered that and then some. And then you go back and you look at, okay, the Tampa Bay game, and it's like they're just attacking the flats and they're playing this soft zone coverage and giving them so much stuff underneath. And clearly they've adjusted, and even when they're in those zones, they're playing tighter to the guys, and it's allowed the pass rush to really, get home by, you know, making that quarterback hold it for just a second longer rather than taking these easy completions. And I just think I think Vic Fangio, having him around, a proven coordinator with a track record of immense success in this league, is very good. I think all the coaches underneath. I think all of them have proven to be very good. Clint Hurt is getting the most out of that D-line. Yeah. Bobby King, I mean, look, we lost our other starting linebacker, N'Kobe Dean, and all of a sudden we're still, it's like we're still functioning at the same level. I mean, we gave up a few more yards to Zach Ertz, but I think they're very well coached. I think they have a lot of talent. The young guys that they've drafted have panned out. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, for Howie Roseman, it's got to be this, like, tip-in-the-cap moment of, like, not like he had anything else to prove, but this has just been an immensely successful, like, rebuild of a defense after it's aged.
Oh yeah,
right.
Could
offense
could put him in the Hall, and he may need a second Super Bowl to make the Hall.
I don't know how that works with executives,
but
and
it's pretty rare.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean,
two different groups. My point is, like, I'd be more inclined to vote for him than whoever put the Broncos together in 97-98. I know Shanahan was the coach. But, like, if it's the same group and it's 2 years in a row, like, good for you. But if you do it with two different groups, and for the most part, this is two different groups.
I mean, two different groups, two different coaches. Like,
yeah.
The only constant, really, if we're being honest, has been Howie and, like, a few players have stayed around through. And other people, there's obviously other people in the organization. But
sure.
He's the one head guy that stuck around through all of it.
So, let me ask you this.
About the specifics of when we think back. I want to try to emulate our defense. Can our defense emulate what the defense of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did to your brother's team in Super Bowl 55?
Oh, yeah.
Super Bowl 55. Tom Brady's on the other sideline. Patrick Mahomes at quarterback felt like he was lost all day under pressure, seeing ghosts, essentially, in the pocket. How close are we to doing that this year?
I mean, it's hard to say because you're talking about different teams. Kansas City is very different from when they played Tampa Bay. I mean, at that point, they had name for the receiving core that they had, but they were so fast and star-studded out wide. And Tampa Bay in that Super Bowl was one of the first teams that really played this really soft quarters defense and just, like, made them keep everything in front of them. And I think that threw Kansas City off, because before that point, they had so many big plays. Tyreek Hill was having enormous plays down the field, Travis Kelce, like, all that. And they played this softer zone, but were able to play tight underneath, and it allowed their defensive line to really feast on them. I don't know that that's the same strategy that the Eagles will employ this week, but I do think that, you know, Kansas City has some really good offensive linemen. They've struggled at other positions. They've solidified their front since they've slid Joe Tooney out to left tackle. But I also think, you know, we have a really good secondary that matches up pretty well. And I think that, you know, when the secondary is playing really good coverage, it allows those guys to kind of get home a little bit more. And I thought the way they played Jaden Daniels, and Jaden Daniels played a pretty good game.
I didn't think he played bad. Yeah.
But I thought that they were a lot more disciplined in their rush lanes. They did a good job of eliminating a lot of big plays for the most part. And if they can kind of keep Pat in there and force him to hold on to it and not let them get the easy completions and the easy scrambles out through the middle of the pocket,
yeah,
you know, they can do some good things defensively for sure. Yeah.
Jason Kelce in studio here with us, obviously, as we get ready for Super Bowl Sunday, now 10 days away. Let's get some calls in. We got a lot to get to with Jason for an hour. Seth in media right now is one of them. Seth, go ahead, bud.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Jason, what's going on, homie?
What's up, Seth?
No, I'm chilling, man, getting ready for the game.
Yeah, baby.
So first let me address something that Joe brought up earlier. And you know, Seltzer's right, man. You should be taking the task today for this. I'm so sick and tired of hearing how Jalen is not up to par or he's the weakest link in the defense. You got to be out of your
offense. And he's not the weakest, but I think he's on the lower end of the offense. I do believe
that. I mean, that's just... Yeah. It's so frustrating as a fan and a loyal fan for so many years to keep hearing this stuff. I mean, this guy has done nothing. And Nick was right the other day. He has done nothing but win. And you know what? For the sake of the conversation, Nick's been the same way.
Seth, let me give you a statement I made earlier this year, and I'll stand by it today. And earlier in the year, very few agree with me, and I wonder if more agree with me now. This is my opinion. You're probably going to disagree. I think Nick is better at his job than Jalen is at his. We did a poll earlier this year. My recollection, it was about 80-20, Jalen. I think Nick's better at his job than Jalen. That's my opinion. Do you disagree or agree with that, Seth?
I would... You think he's better at his job than Jalen? That's a good question, man. I missed that poll. I would have to say that I think Jalen's better at his job because he's had to deal with... And this is a question I wanted to pose to Jason. I mean, we're on the cusp of having to deal with another offensive coordinator the third in 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid's done nothing but been bounced around his whole career, and that's what's so impressive is he just keeps winning. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to like brown nose him or anything, but like he's the truth. He is. And like what and to keep seeing all these people make a list of quarterbacks and sometimes leaving them out of the top 10. I mean, I can't fathom not what else he has to do to prove this, you know? And I wanted to know, you know, for Jason, two questions.
Sure.
How important is this going to be going forward? Is the consistency for a group of talented players? Because we have a super talented roster, right? But like,
no doubt.
If they have to deal with another offensive coordinator, right? Like how important is consistency for guys like that? They can make adjustments at the professional level, but I mean, this is a big deal, you know? And then the second question is the, how frustrating is it for you as somebody who's so recently removed from playing with some of these guys who you're still friends with that now you hear from people who are now your coworkers, right? You got to look at this from the other side,
right.
Hearing people say things like, well, you know, he's not exactly the best and he's got a lot of problems. Or, you know, speaking of Jalen or Nick or whatever, you know, like this guy.
Hi, Seth, we got you. Great series of questions. Yeah. Give me an answer for a song, then we'll get Jason's answers. Give me a great song with historical reference.
I don't know if you know this or not, but the song Money for Nothing was, most of the lyrics on that were based off of things that these guys were hearing movers say in a department store.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Okay, good call, Seth. Very thought-provoking. Jason, two different, totally different questions there. Your thoughts on those questions.
Okay, I'm trying to think of where to begin. I guess I'll start with, am I answering your question of who's better at their job?
No, you don't have to answer that. But sure. His two questions were, what's it like to be friends with these guys that get often criticized,
yep.
Especially when you're currently working with people that are the people criticizing them at times?
Yeah.
And then what was the first question?
about the different coordinators, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
the first
so.
Question, yeah. So I guess, okay, long-winded way. First of all, I think... there's going to be some continuity because they're retaining Nick Sirianni, right? So whoever that coordinator is brought in, if that happens, it's not going to be a full-fledged shift. And even this year with Kellen, you know, there'll be new terminology. There'll also be a lot of terminology that remains the same. There is a feeling out period, and I think we saw that this season, whenever there's a shift. So obviously continuity plays a big factor in that. But I think that, you know, a lot of it just depends on who they end up hiring and how good they end up being in meshing into everything. And I think, you know, Nick now has been doing this job as a head coach for a number of times. He's replaced, this will be his fourth different offensive coordinator as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles if Kellen Moore is hired someplace else. So I think he's got a familiarity with, you know, what he's looking for and trying to ideate on what guys he thinks would do a good job. In a perfect world, you develop this into a situation where you're always promoting from within. That's hard to do. And it's hard to know sometimes when you're promoting from within, which guys are going to really take that next step and be able to assert themselves. And this is what I always felt as a player. Whenever there was somebody promoted, you need to see them in a different light. And a lot of that is on that person to assert themselves that way. And it's hard to do from a player standpoint. It's hard to do from other coaches' standpoint. Mm. And I think sometimes doing it from the outside, you avoid that. But then you get the negative of, hey, we're now shifting and losing a little bit of what we were. So it'll be interesting to see if they have to make that decision, which of those routes they go. I happen to think Jalen Hurts is an immensely talented quarterback who has, you know, unfortunately dealt with this a lot, which in some ways is a strength to have to deal with it again if he has to.
What about working with knuckleheads like me? No, I'm serious, because it is an interesting dynamic. You know, I mean, yeah. We see all sorts of stuff. I've been very critical of Jalen. John had many times been very, very critical of Nick. You obviously have a good relationship with both. I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you deal with it as players, right? And you see the criticism when you're actually teammates. And I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, I think critics usually bring up good points, right? They're usually saying things that are grounded in some level of reality. And there might be a degree at which you disagree with them. And that certainly happens a lot with Jalen and Nick Sirianni, because I happen to know them individually. And I think higher of them just on a baseline principle. And I think because I'm more connected to them, I tend to magnify their strengths and the things that I know that they do really well. And I'm privy to those experiences that critics aren't. So I don't really, like, you know, fault people for thinking certain ways. I think it's just, you know, they're going with the information they have and what they think to be true. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I just happen to disagree with it in a lot of situations.
Yeah, and makes sense.
For me, like Jalen, I think Jalen never gets enough credit for a lot of the things he does for this offense. And I don't. Yeah, you know, Saquon Barkley would not have the season he had without having Jalen Hurts as a quarterback. And that's a reality of it. And he never gets credit for that. And a little bit, but all of that goes to the offensive line and Saquon. Mm-hmm. The reality is his threat as a runner, his threat as an RPO person, all of that stuff opens up so many other things. And then, you know, he throws the talented receivers. Yeah, I mean, most quarterbacks are good when they throw, are only good if they have talented receivers to throw it to. It's very rare that a quarterback is good throwing to bad players. I mean, you know, what Josh Allen has done this year was truly remarkable, to be honest with you. But I think it's, to me, he has cemented himself as a competitor and as a leader. He's just done so well this postseason, so I'm really happy for Jalen, and I'm obviously happy for Nick.
Yeah. What about the pass protection issues we had at your position?
Yeah.
We had Landon start the game, and Landon was very limited in just like what he could do.
We want to talk about Jalen Hurts. They're 4th and 5. He throws a great ball to AJ Brown down the left sideline, and now they get themselves into a 3rd down situation after that. Blown protection through the middle. He scrambles
by Landon.
Out. Well, yeah, but I think he was ham. I want to give Landon credit. I think his knee was bothering him at that point. But yes, it was not good.
Yeah.
That guy should not be running through the A-gap unblocked. And it was a 0 blitz. And somehow, I mean, thankfully, the right defensive end lost contain for a second. And he was able to sneak out there, and they force the pass interference to get it down to the 1. And
yeah,
I think it's, you know, there was a number of plays that Jalen made throughout that game. And, yeah, the protection issues were not great, especially when it's not really guys getting beat, which is, you know, if guys are getting beat, that's something that's like, oh, man, we can't really fix that. But when it's stuff where it's, you know, protection issues, where it's like assignments, and a lot of it's hard to really know because, I mean, both of those guys were so banged up, and I don't know if that was affecting things
right. Or
what the communication right. Issues were at
times.
Well,
it had to be. I mean, you got a new center. I mean, it's got to affect, you know, things.
It's not even just the
new center.
And by
the way, 4 of the players on the line were playing next to someone they hadn't played with
the whole season.
Four of the 5.
There were some communication things it looked like, but there was also just like, you know, Landon's limping around in the middle of the field.
Totally.
And it's like, I don't even know if he can set over there.
Yeah.
And maybe that was affecting it. And maybe he just couldn't get there. So he was hoping that the running back would adjust and take that guy. So, you know, I try not to put too much credence into that, because I think when these guys are healthy in a couple weeks, that that issue will be corrected. But
yeah,
they're going to be tested. Listen, Spagnuolo, he will dial up blitzes from all over the place. We saw at the last Super Bowl. Every time I've played him, it's always been a fun cat and mouse. You know, which way is he bringing it? Is he's going to put the free safety down and then bring it to the field? He's going to bring it to the field, and then all of a sudden the corner's going to come. He mixes it up as well as anybody, and it mixes it up from a man pressure to a zone pressure. Like, he'll give you everything and then some. Yeah.
Do the players talk about that? Do the players feel the Spags pressure? You know he's got this reputation.
Yeah.
So what about the reputation of Kellen Moore? How does that sort of counterbalance the Spags reputation for the players?
Yeah, I don't know if I... Yeah, I don't know. I don't really necessarily think about it from a Kellen Moore versus Spags. I always thought about it more as players. I mean, it is offensive coordinator versus them. But at the end of the day, when the blitz happens, most of the time it's on the players to adjust. And Kellen will have a plan going into it, obviously, like every offense goes into a game. Like, hey, if we're getting this, this, and this, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to this. We're going to throw here. And I think that plan has been better this year than it was last year. But I always felt... like going up against Spags, for the most part, you try and make sure you're accounting for all of these different pressures he can give you, and then you try and understand the situations in which they're going to occur, and hopefully, you have answers built in to all the plays that need them, and then if you see it coming, which we've done before, you can gash them. Like, I think, the way in which it comes. And the reason why Spags is so good is because he's great at disguising it. When that disguise can be met with, anticipation.
Decoding it.
It can be a devastating thing.
Yeah. So you got a play that beats the blitz and it's coming.
It can work really well. But, that's the cat and mouse game that I always loved. And that's why I liked playing against guys like Spags and Wink Martindale. And, it's like, hey, I'm going to, throw everything out on the line here. In anticipation, this is right. And when it's right, it's like, hey, we just scored a touchdown. It's awesome.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
When it's wrong, it's like, all right, we got a punt now. That sucks. But,
Jason in studio, the game coming up in 10 days. We got so much about the game to get to with Jason. Let's do more on the calls here with Paul in Downingtown. What's going on, Paul?
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jason.
Morning.
So, I really love this conversation about Hurts because, to me, Jalen Hurts is kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle, because everything I hear people say, I tend to agree with, and I could actually give you like all 22 video evidence for. So the people that want to say he's borderline like top three, I'll put together a video of all 22 tapes that will demonstrate that. And so people that are more towards the concerns in the passing game, not throwing people open, seems unwilling to get rid of the ball at times, holds it too long. I'll put together an all 22 tape that demonstrates that perfectly. And I also don't kind of buy into this one game proves everything. Last week was fantastic. But we also know that Nick Foles outplayed one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play the game. And Nick Foles also lost every starting job he ever earned because of the way he played football.
That's true.
So it's really an interesting thing because, it's almost like everybody's right. There's only, there's only just like degrees of rightness.
I've seen a lot of Philadelphia sports, obviously, and national, but Philly is, what I know the most. He's been one of the more confounding athletes ever, if not the most, in my lifetime to try to assess how good truly is he. And I think there is just an immense amount of disagreement amongst the fan base, more than perhaps any athlete I've ever seen.
Yeah, it really is. And in a little bit, it kind of reminds me of Schmitty, although I don't think anyone's saying Jalen's the greatest quarterback ever to play. When Schmitty played, I'm old enough to remember this, people were hypercritical of him. They called him a choke artist. They said that he never came.
Yeah, that was immense. That was immense underappreciation, to say the least.
It was.
Joel's a player that, Rhea, you've been as critical as just about anybody, and you're looking pretty good right now. I mean, you're looking good on your Joel opinions.
Rhea's always looking good.
Yes.
Like, as it relates to trying to figure out the Jalen thing, the bottom line is that some athletes are hard to assess.
Joel's, I told you before, Larry Brown summed it up for me really easy. when you teach players at a young age when they're first coming in that losing is okay,
yeah,
it's always okay. And it's not, it doesn't hurt you as much.
Yeah, no, it's a thing.
I agree.
It's, hey, Paul, give me an answer, my man. A song that's got historical references in it and is a great song.
Sure. And real quickly on Jalen, just concretely, the one thing I would like to say concretely is my list of quarterbacks I would rather have other than Jalen Hurts has been cut in half this season.
Well, you know what? I mean, yeah, Paul, I'll tell you, part of what makes that statement, I think, factually true for most, and I'm going to have to figure it out, you know, maybe more on the all season. A lot of the quarterbacks, and I mean a lot of them, in the 5 to 12 range went backwards this year. Herbert, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, maybe Jordan Love.
C.J. Stroud.
Like that whole zone that he was generally, you know, compared to. Almost all of them took a step back. Mm-hmm. And that's going
to... Hard to play quarterback.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Paul, a song. Give it to me.
It's Red Sector A. It was inspired by a bandmate's mother's times in the Holocaust. It's a very interesting song by Rush.
All right, Paul, appreciate that. Let's get to something Seth Joyner said. Go ahead, Jason.
And your quarterback is an incredibly tough position to evaluate because there's so many confounding factors between the play that's called, you know, what the defense play call is. They're in charge of so much that it's really impossible to truly grasp everything behind it. Now, it's very easy to see like the top performers are like, okay, this guy's like doing it better than everybody else. That's very apparent. But I think when you see a guy that's, I mean, I just don't, it's not as easy to see. That's why it's so hard to draft that position every single season. You never know which guys are going to pan out. That's why you have Baker Mayfield, you know, have a falling out in Cleveland, and all of a sudden he has a resurgence in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
There's so many things between the offensive line, receiving options, coach, you know, play being called, all how good the defense is and how many opportunities you get as an offense. All of these things, you know, compound into the level of play of the quarterback. And I just, you know, I don't think it's necessarily fair to fault Jalen Hurts because he's playing with a great team. Like, the reality is they're one of the best offenses in the NFL. He's a big reason that they're there. You know, is he as good without better players around him? Of course not. Nobody's as good without better players around you. I think the question is what degree of that is there that is causing the success. And I think that that's a fair question, but I think that at the same time, he's proven that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league year in, year out. He continually makes, he's making some of the best decisions he's ever made in his career this year. And I think that it's resulted in them having one of the best seasons of date. Like, I mean, you know, outside of 2017, I don't know if there's a better regular season Philadelphia Eagles team.
Well, yeah, this is getting, I mean, they're in the upper echelon. There's some people who think it's the best Eagles team ever. It might be. I mean, there's really, to me, only three or four you can choose from. 04, 17, 22, this one, 80, you know, in the Super Bowl era. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I liked 02, but 02 lost to Tampa, and like, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
It is what it is. I mean, they lost.
Yeah. I think 2017, we were really good in certain facets. We also had weaknesses. And we got hot at the complete right moment, and that was a big reason why we won it.
For sure.
I think from a talent perspective, there's some teams there in the early 2000s that, I mean, I remember watching where it's like, dude, these guys were stacked.
I know.
I mean, especially on the defensive side
Look,
of the ball.
I think 04, I'm just telling you.
It is so crazy looking back at those guys.
I know.
And that they didn't end up getting a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I also think the 04 Eagles faced the hardest competition in a Super Bowl. Yeah. Brady had developed into greatness, and they still had the defense. Like I thought 0-4 New England was a beast. No shame losing to them by 3 points.
They were really good.
Yeah.
Could you talk about how critical it is to have a nickel like Cooper DeJean?
Cooper DeJean, yeah.
Like Cooper DeJean, he's so far ahead of schedule, it's crazy.
There's no question. I mean,
a rookie going out there and playing like he does. Just talk about the versatility that he brings.
Well, I mean... I think you see it when, you know, he went in, and that was kind of the one thing that happened where the defense kind of turned it around. And I think the world of Avante Maddox. I think he's a great player, and I've always loved being his teammate. But I think Cooper has some size to him, and when you're playing these nickel packages, that nickel is a backer.
Yep,
structurally.
And there's going to be
situations where they're going to be responsible for setting an edge or filling a run fit, and that is hard to find a guy that can match up with the slot receivers in this league and be able to do that. Okay, and he is doing both of those phenomenally. He plays well on the run. He's very sticky in coverage. And then on top of that, he's just very instinctual. You watch some of the plays he makes and some of the anticipation that happens. And I just think that he has all of those traits wound into one player, and he's playing phenomenally. So it's made a huge difference to the defense. Linebacker in general, you know, when I think of this defense, everybody, you know, the defensive line and the back end is playing pretty well, especially at you know, at corner. But between Cooper DeJean and Zach Bond and controlling the middle of the field and what they've done, it makes such a huge difference for the entirety of the defense. And it's funny because that's always been the area that we've never really invested in and never really, you know, we've always viewed as the weakest part of, like, or not the weakest, but it's always been viewed as the least important to solidify. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have that solidified, you see how much of a difference it makes. So, you know, I think hopefully we can hold on to that for a while.
Yeah, well, he's going to be under contract for a while, pretty cheap. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia as we broadcast today from the Tasty Cake Studio. Jason with us, obviously, here for about another half hour. Jason, one of the things, I mean, there's a million reasons we love having you in here, but on a day like this, as the Eagles get ready for the bowl, your insight into the experience of playing, winning a Super Bowl, and losing a Super Bowl is fascinating. So let me just start with this statement. My sense from afar is that oftentimes the difference between winning and losing is so narrow that there's nothing that really can be criticized from a preparation standpoint. They weren't focused enough. Like, I don't think it worked. Like, I saw John Starks take a shot one time that if the ball goes in, Patrick Ewing's a champion. Hakeem just happened to block that shot, and the Knicks lost game 6 and 7, so Hakeem's the champ and Ewing's not. Like, he could have made the shot. You know, I don't think Pat Riley didn't do something right in training camp to prepare them as a team. Here's my question for you. You've won one, you've lost one. Did you notice anything discernible in the difference in the preparation for the game or the mentality during the game? Both teams held a 10-point lead at halftime. Both teams gave up a touchdown within like 3 minutes of the second half. It was a 3-point game in both games. One game, it spiraled out of control. The other one, you guys maintained it enough. Any discernible difference if you were giving the Eagles advice on how to do one better than the other?
I don't think so. I don't really have anything that stands out. The biggest difference I would say is we should have switched cleats at halftime. I mean, that's the thing that I think, looking back, it's like, man, I think, you know, that field was such a, you know, factor for the defensive line play, and that was such a strength of our defense that year. And I don't know that switching cleats would have made a difference or not, but, you know, I think from a preparation standpoint, I don't think there was that much there. Obviously, you know, we would have liked to have a defensive game plan that would have stopped them more than maybe two or three times. I know that Jonathan Gannon's been criticized for taking interviews and all that stuff. I don't think that factored into it. I just think that, you know, he played one of the best quarterbacks and Andy Reid, and they had a good game plan, and that's kind of how it went. And then the field, I think, assisted some of their ease at operating because of the defensive line's limitations.
Yeah.
As it did ours. You know, Chris Jones was also not a factor, which, believe me, I appreciated the field being a little rough when I had to block him. So I think that, you know, when you're preparing, I think you really should focus on the things that maximize the outcome and the difference of those. And I think oftentimes football teams, I hate the expression "everything matters," and it's like, obviously everything matters, butterfly effect, all this nonsense. There are things that matter a lot more, and we should focus on those. And I think that most coaches realize that. And I think players sometimes worry about things that, quite frankly, make minimal difference in the outcome of the game. And sometimes they're directing that attention in a way that is not going to necessarily improve that. But drawing on what we're saying just in terms of the last Super Bowl, I don't really think so. I thought the offense functioned really well. I thought that, you know, wish we would have handled the dynamics of the field better. Wish we would have, you know, done some things better. But
I wish Nick had gone for that fourth down.
I think he does too. And I wish I would have called a different call on a blitz. You know, I feel like over my career, I've been very good against spags with blitz pickups. And there's one blitz pickup that still haunts me from that game where I way overthought it and made a bad call, and it hurt us on a third down right before that fourth down.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick knew, and I've said that to Nick, and Nick has said, you know, I think, you know, he thinks about that all the time, too. And I'm sure even this past week, I mean, this is the way it goes. I mean, I'm sure Dan Quinn thinks about that 4th-and-3 he had early in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, if he goes for that and they end up getting a touchdown there, does that change the dynamic of it? And
particularly because to the Nick thing, because Doug went for the fourth down from, like, the 50-yard line or 45.
No, it was our, yeah, it was Eagles territory.
Yeah, like, you know, so, and look, you guys were buried further. You were around the 20 or 25.
We were way in our zone, but we knew that we weren't stopping them at that point.
Correct.
Which is, I think, the criticism, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that the reality is maybe that's something that he thinks about this time around.
Could
right?
be, yeah.
But I think that for the most part, you know, I also try not to overthink these minuscule situations that, mm-hmm. you know, there's always going to be one of those a game that you'd overdo. I just think, you know, you try and maximize the things that you think are going to allow you to perform better this time around against this team and against this coordinator. And whatever you think that is, you roll with it. And I think we were really close last time. I think, again, the Eagles have so much talent on both sides of the ball. I think Vic Fangio has been amazing this year. I'm looking forward to that matchup of Patrick Mahomes in that Kansas City offense and Andy Reid versus Vic Fangio in this defense. That is going to be fun just as a football fan to watch take place.
What's the best way to slow down your brother?
Oh, man, now we're getting into the who you're rooting for.
Get him drunk on Saturday night!
I don't know. I'm not an expert in that. I mean, hopefully we'll have, I'm assuming we'll be treating him different than we treated Zach Ertz. I mean, Zach went off in the game.
11 catches for 104.
So hopefully as an Eagles fan, hopefully we have a game plan for not allowing that much room and things like that. But credit to Zach. I mean, Zach played a great game and he really came on second half of the year with Jaden Daniels. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to probably try and put somebody on him and make sure that he's not getting a lot of opportunities. They match up well from a coverage standpoint. And, like, it's easy to say, hey, let's go out there and let's man guys up and let's just play ball. Andy Reid's too good to just do that on. He'll find ways to scheme things up. He'll find ways to run mesh concepts and things and throw you off. You still got to be creative. You still got to be deceptive. Pat Mahomes is too good. It doesn't matter how good you are. You still have to be really – you can't be predictable against a group like this. So I think that they'll try a number of things to slow Travis down.
Yeah.